Hello and welcome to Fidelity Connects, connecting you to the world of investing and helping you stay ahead. Portfolio manager Kyle Weaver is back for another Fidelity Connects podcast to share his insights on U.S. equities and long-term trends beyond the upcoming elections and ongoing coronavirus pandemic. For Canadian investors, Kyle manages the recently launched Fidelity U.S. Growth Opportunities class. And in today's podcast, Kyle starts by providing a summary on his investment philosophy and discusses what he looks for when investing in companies in his fund. He then takes a deeper dive into some hot topics, such as the upcoming election, how he navigated through the early coronavirus volatility, and how he currently has his fund positioned. Commentary surrounding COVID-19 and financial markets is frequently changing. Today's podcast was recorded on September 16th, 2020. The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the participants and do not reflect those of Fidelity Investments Canada ULC or its affiliates. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be construed as investment, tax, or legal advice. It is not an offer to sell or buy, or an endorsement, recommendation, or sponsorship of any entity or security cited. Read a fund's prospectus before investing. Funds are not guaranteed. Their values change frequently, and past performance may not be repeated. Fees, expenses, and commissions are all associated with fund investments.
Welcome to you, Kyle. Great to see you again.
Thanks so much, Pamela, and thanks a lot for having me on the show, and it's great to be here.
We're pleased that you have time to join us today. Kyle, I want to begin with sort of a little bit of a historical view of things and really helping us to go forward with this. There's this discussion of the hope phase, which is often the phase after a recession or a huge downturn. Usually a secular bull market comes out of a recession. And so we're in this sort of hope period now. You look much further ahead. I'm curious what you see further ahead, if you can sum that up for us.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, as you know, the main criteria for stock selection in my fund is to try to find names that can double or triple in value over a 3 to 7 year time frame as just kind of a starting point for whether the company, the business model is interesting on a long-term basis. And there's names in the fund today that, you know, I'd owned even in previous funds. So I've, you know, owned them for 15 years or longer, and they may hopefully they'll still be in there, you know, in decades to come. But it depends on sort of how, you know, there are parts of the economy or some secular trends that you can comfortably look out a few years. I think there's others that you can comfortably see staying in place for decades. So the shift from cash to electronic forms of payment that's fueled Visa and MasterCard's growth has been around for decades, and you know it continues to this day. So it does depend, but the companies that I'm looking for, the common theme is that they're not dependent on the pace of the broader economic recovery that we're all hoping for humanitarian reasons. But they are much more dependent on the secular tailwinds, that many of which were in place even before coronavirus accelerated them.
So let's go there, because it's interesting to get your perspective. I mean, one of the secular trends I just want to get your thoughts on is just sort of this trend of digitization, which has taken over some parts of the world. We've seen stocks that obviously depend on that do very, very, very well. But it's led us into this recovery somewhat out so far, but we've got a long way to go. Does it continue?
I think, you know, business model to business model, I look at every stock individually and every business model individually, but as a broad statement, I think that's one of the broader statements that I feel safe saying that I think that digital transformation is a trend that is very broad. It gets called different things in different sectors, and I think it's here to stay. And many of the companies that saw accelerating growth in the last 6 months, what they really saw was almost a pull forward of the next 5 years into a 6 month time frame. And so And I think many of those changes are very hard to imagine reversing and are here to stay.
So interesting, because there's so many parts of the economy. I mean, you think of government that probably hasn't been digitized yet. I mean, there's just so many areas and pockets that haven't experienced it yet or not.
Yeah, it's funny. And it's just to, you know, when we talk about the movement of ad dollars from traditional forms of advertising to the internet, or to over-the-top video, you know, and internet TV and Netflixes and YouTubes and ad-funded forms of that. That's also just, that is a form of the digitization of what was, you know, an analog stream or a linear way of watching video. And across the fund, there's many different kind of forms of that digital transformation, but there are, it's one of the broader, I guess, broader themes.
When you're turning over rocks and doing this incredible amount of research in terms of depth and looking into the future, I wonder if you can just speak to that process a little bit, because of course, some of the big names, some of the FANG names, they started small too, and some people were very lucky to catch them earlier on. Can you give us a sense of your process of how you kind of look for the ones that are going to be huge one day? I mean, how do you do that?
Well, we have a great team that helps with that, and I work with fabulous colleagues that also help us cast a really wide net across the globe and across various industries, and to look at not just the bread and butter stocks, the core ones that matter a lot to the index and to the fund, but also hopefully, you know, the index components and the blue chip names of 10 years from now into the in the future. And I think, you know, there's a smaller list of stocks in the fund that I call them kind of the breakthrough growth or the tipping point stocks that do have not just, you know, the potential to double or triple, but potentially be 5 or 10 or 20 or 100x the size. And that's where a lot of the alpha that the fund has generated over the last, you know, have come from names like that. And you look for large markets, but where there is, the company may be small at the time, but growing very quickly with good and improving unit economics, a path towards profitability, you know, great management, and in a very large market that will not enable them to grow for a long time to come. So whether you're looking at a Wayfair or a Roku or a Wix or a Trade Desk or a Carvana, those are, you know, that was kind of, I think those are some of the common characteristics of those sorts of names.
It's very interesting. I think when we spoke, I can't remember, not too long ago, a few months back, you're talking about sort of having three buckets, and I'm assuming what you just sort of described as is one bucket. Can you kind of go through the others?
Yeah, sure. So I just described the most exciting bucket and the place where I live and most of my time. But there's good stuff in all three buckets. The biggest component of the biggest kind of bucket in the fund are the, I just call them the strong long-term grower bucket. And that's the bread and butter. It's what's in the index, and it's what, and they're generally the recognized large and mega cap stocks that have been successful, but that we still think have, you know, good growth ahead. And the third bucket are the, I call them the resilient growth names. And those are names that are actually, it's code for value. Those are names that look cheap on today's earnings. And the market has collectively decided that the earnings are not sustainable or that the growth is over. And for various reasons, we think that we come to a different conclusion and think that the growth is underrated. And so you may be able to buy a stock at, you know, at a level that a value investor might find appealing, 10 or 12 or 14 times earnings. But with the idea that several years from now, it'll be much cheaper than that, from the earnings that it has generated.
So let's sort of maybe stick with the value idea, or maybe it's just sort of a much longer term horizon. But a lot of people will say there's a fair amount of risk in the markets right now. We've got the presidential election on its way, and obviously we're in the midst of a global pandemic. So you have to kind of look through it. But does this cause a fair amount of volatility in the next several months in your mind. And I guess what do you do with that? Like, are you sort of looking forward to the volatility? Just as an aside, obviously nothing to do with sort of the human side of the story. But.
Well, you know, if the this has been one of the most volatile years I can remember in investing in, both down and then up. And you know, if volatility continues, I think that's great, because part of my belief is that a public equity fund like this one should be positioned to take advantage of volatility, and we should welcome it and profit from it over the long term, and not feel like we're victims of it. So the fund is always kind of positioned to where in the hopes that that things will work out well on a and smoothly, but also so that you can add to positions that get knocked around for reasons that are transitory or not, or just invalid by the market. And you know, the March and April period was of this year, when the market was down a lot, was a great kind of example of the fund in action, just finding dislocations between the price and the value of these business models that got really extreme, as there were so many forced sellers in the market. There were so many weak hands, and it was really a chance to add to some favorite names at prices that were, you know, 50 or 60 or 70% cheaper than they'd been in January and February.
I want to kind of come back to that in a second. One of the questions coming in is from an advisor, does it really matter who wins the U.S. presidential election? I mean, from your perspective in investing and in the fund itself, does it matter?
In terms of the business models that I'm invested in, I mean, I do not, part of my investment philosophy is that I can't predict geopolitical events or macro events or the price of gas or where interest rates are going to be. So I build the portfolio to be resilient to all of those factors, and occasionally, very occasionally, feel like you get paid, the bet becomes so one-sided in the market that you might, that I can be persuaded to bet on the chance that it goes the other way. For example, in earlier this year, when there was, looked like there was a chance of a Sanders or Warren presidency, there was a lot of fear that the payer business models could be outlawed if there was a Democratic sweep. And the stocks, those business models were priced so relatively cheaply that I thought it was an opportunity to add to them. And you could say that that was taking a macro bet, but I felt like it wasn't really taking that much of a bet because of where they were priced. And that really is the exception rather than the rule in general. The business models that I own are fueled by long-term secular growth trends that, just each business model has its own set of drivers that are not dependent on the macro or the market.
Here's an interesting one coming in. And I know that a lot of the companies that you invest in sort of, as you say, sort of for that alpha generation maybe are not in a profitable situation at this stage. But this question is, so how much do you look at valuations? Do you pay more attention, say, to PE ratios versus free cash flow? I think just trying to get a sense of how you do some of that.
Well, here's the fascinating thing. I'm really glad you asked, because a lot of people think that growth investors don't care about valuation. And that is not true. The catch is that I care very deeply about valuation, and I try to look at valuation 3, 5, 7 years out. And that is the common theme, whether it's in the resilient growth bucket, the breakthrough growth, or the strong long-term growers. Everything in the fund hopefully has a bottoms-up reason for looking very, very cheap in the out years. And it's, you know, terrific for us as investors that there's this opportunity, and that the market is so efficient on a short-term basis that it often just does not look forward very far. And you can pick whichever blue chip name that's been around for 20 years you want: Visa, MasterCard, Accenture, IBM, Amazon, Microsoft, any of those. If you go to Bloomberg and try to look at there'll be 40 estimates for this year and 40 estimates for next year. And by the time you get to 2023 or 2024, there'll be one or two or maybe none. For many of those business models, if I think it is possible to predict what they will look like, you know, with much more certainty than it's possible to predict, you know, the composition of Congress or the presidency or where interest rates will be or gas prices or anything like that.
Yeah, it's an interesting sort of response also to the, it seems like the number of retail investors in the market in slightly new ways that, you know, you might be accessing certain tools that give you a couple of years of somewhat estimate clarity and so on. But beyond that, as you say, it's, you know, it comes down to sort of some of your research. I'll just put these two questions together. They're pretty interesting. It has to do really with the fall volatility or the autumn volatility that sort of is expected, perhaps we've seen already. Do you have a greater cash position? And how do you, like, are you ready to deploy, or just give us some sense of that?
Yeah, I try not to have any cash in the fund. I think it's, you know, people trust me with their cash to invest it in good stocks, and there are always good stocks out there, and different stocks work at different times. By being a diversified growth fund, there is almost always something that's out of favor. And I gave an example earlier, you know, that during, at a time when many of the internet names were being much more appreciated, you know, many of the healthcare names had fallen out of favor, and there was a panic that they might be, you know, outlawed, for example. There's always, in a diversified growth fund, there are always opportunities, or so far it seems like there have always been opportunities. So I periods of volatility, I do use them to compare price to value on each individual name and buy, you know, what looks like it'll be the best idea at that time. But I can fund it from other ideas rather than from cash.
Can you give us a sense just on trading? I mean, you talked a little bit about opportunities that you took advantage of through the month of March, April. But how much more trading did you do in that period of time? Like, was it just sort of a frenzied time for you, or how did that work?
It was pretty frenzied. You know, prices were moving around quite a bit. And I mean, part of my process is not to worry about 3% and 5% moves and little squiggles that won't really matter over the long term. But, you know, in certain time periods, in March and April was certainly this way. There would be 20%, 30% moves in a stock intraday, and larger moves than that on a week-to-week basis. So really, I would describe March and April as kind of compressing, you know, 2 years of trading and volatility into 2 months. That is not to say that turnover was, you know, 12 times higher, but it was much higher than usual. Again, just because of the opportunities that were being presented right then, and that is the way that I think, you know, you should think of them. Those are opportunities when you find a good idea that you thought could be a double before, and at the price it's at, it's now a 10-bagger.
Wow, that's great. That's how you talk when you're not on a formal webcast such as this. Kyle, tell us about, you joined North Star not so long ago. I can't remember exactly when, but how's it going?
It's going great. Joel and I, you know, we don't see each other in the hallways anymore because there's no hallways. You know, I think we're each of us still, he's very true to his value discipline, and I'm very true in the North Star Fund to the growth discipline. And I think it's kind of a nice combination. The one thing that both of us have in common, I think, is that we believe very deeply in valuation and try to take a long-term view of having resilient business models. And the twist is a little bit that I think I do try to find the business models that are changing and growing rapidly to get to that, to get to that value in the out years. And Joel, you know, has a deep understanding of his companies and how you know, they are undervalued on the current state of their business as it is today.
Well, let's press you a bit on that, because, you know, there are discussions certainly that value, you know, has sort of been expected to take off in certain areas, and it isn't, you know, and these are the critics. But I mean, how do you look at that debate? Is there anything to it?
I'm honestly, I'm so heads down on my own growth stocks that I can't speak so much to the debate on the value stocks. I do firmly believe, as most value investors, I think, would agree, that stocks follow earnings and free cash flow. And, you know, when you're buying a growth business, you're expecting the earnings and free cash flow to grow to a level that such that the price you bought it at will prove to be very cheap over time. Value stocks, they still need to perform, you know, to be good stocks. And there are certain parts of the market or of the economy that are the inverse of some of the growth company, you know, that are being disrupted by some of the growth names. So, you know, it has still been a challenging time for many brick and mortar retailers, not some really well-positioned ones like Costco and, you know, Walmart and others that have benefited from recent disruptions. But for many, it's been difficult, mall-based retailers. You know, the other side of the software as a service theme is that on-premise software has virtually, you know, disappeared, become even more difficult to deploy in an environment where you can't get into your building or to your own data centers. So, you know, there are pockets of weakness, and you know, not every company benefits from the secular trends that are in place. But I really just, I'm focused on the growth names and not the ones that are on the wrong side.
Yeah. We spoke about digitization kind of at the beginning of our conversation. Lots of questions coming in on deglobalization, supply chains. There was a Bloomberg article out this morning I was reading, just talking about how certain tech companies, in order to keep operations in the United States, are going to demand some money, some payment, because, you know, Singapore is courting them, or, you know, other parts of the world. And it speaks to an interesting shift in supply chains. Anyway, do you have any comment on supply chains, how you're watching things unfold, how they may affect in terms of headwinds to certain tech companies, or maybe tailwinds? I don't know.
I do not have any huge insights into that. I do think ideas in the fund that are, they're smaller positions because unfortunately the companies themselves are smaller, but in deference to your question, they're in there partly because I do think there's, if supply chains get reconfigured, these would be companies that benefit from that. Most of the names in the fund are pretty insulated from supply chain dynamics, or it's not a core part of the investment thesis. It isn't a topic that I've really delved deeply into.
It's interesting. It's one that's coming up quite a lot. So here's a question. Are you focusing more on small mid caps at the moment versus large caps? Can you divide it that way?
You know, when I spend time looking for the breakthrough growth, the tipping point stocks that I was talking about earlier, those tend to be small and mid caps. And those are the most exciting, funnest to research. You know, you're trying to find companies before they're really recognized and before everyone else has done the work also to appreciate them. So I'm always looking for those ideas. But at the same time, you can never take your eye off the large caps and the mega caps, because they are, you know, they're the most important names to the index overall. And they're some of the most important names to the fund. So I guess I'm always working on everything all the time in terms of those buckets.
So let me leave you with an easy question here. So is there going to be regulation of some of these big tech names?
Maybe. I think that's an interesting topic. Again, like I don't believe that I would be able to predict what the regulation would be, or assign a probability anybody should put any put any confidence in on whether it'll happen or what form it'll take. But what I can do as an investor is look at what's the range of outcomes if they are regulated or broken up in some way. And that's what I think is really, it's quite an interesting thing to think about.
Thank you for listening to the Fidelity Connects podcast. For more information on future live webcasts, please visit fidelity.ca. Don't forget to follow Fidelity Canada on Twitter and subscribe to Fidelity Connects on your podcast platform of choice.